Welcome back to the Average to Savage Show with Scaletti, a podcast that will help you overcome your limiting beliefs, setbacks, and fears to create the life you were destined to live.
Welcome to Say No to Doubt, the podcast where we explore the power of resilience, determination, and growth. I'm your host, Darren Roberts, and I'm thrilled to be embarking on this journey with you. In this series, we'll be diving deep into the stories of individuals who have faced adversity head-on, who have stared doubt in the face and said, not today. We'll learn about their struggles, their triumphs, and most importantly, the lessons they've learned along the way. In today's episode, we have a truly inspiring guest, Matthew Scaletti. Matthew is a longtime entrepreneur, an endurance athlete, a public speaker, a bodybuilder, and a certified financial planner. He's a man who has accomplished incredible feats, but beneath all these titles, he's a man who has faced his own battles and emerged victorious. Matthew's journey is a testament to the power of change and the strength of the human spirit. From overcoming alcoholism to running 21 marathons in 21 days, Matthew's story is one of resilience and determination. So whether you're tuning in during your morning commute, your evening run, or as you wind down for the day, we hope this conversation inspires you, challenges you, and reminds you that no matter what you're facing, you have the power to say no to doubt. Let's dive in. Matt, thanks so much for joining. Welcome to Say No to Doubt. I'm really, really excited to have you and to just chat with you. You know, we've had some time to chat previously, seen a lot of the incredible things that you've accomplished and the inspiration that you've had an impact on so many people's lives. And I'm really excited to talk about some of those things. And I want to just sort of give the listeners a little bit of background about yourself. Matt Scaletti, a longtime entrepreneur, endurance athlete. He's done some incredible things. He's a wonderful public speaker, also bodybuilder. And beneath all of this, which is really fascinating as well, he spends the first 45 hours a week helping people with their financial planning. He's a certified financial planner. We're just really, really excited to have you here on Say No to Doubt. So thanks so much for joining.
Thanks for having me. I'm so pumped to be here and congrats on the podcast. This is exciting.
Thanks, bud. I really, really appreciate it. You know, one of the things in, you know, to talk a little bit about, you know, your endurance work, your speaking work, you've accomplished so much. But one of the things that really was intriguing to me is October 30th, 2011. And that was sort of this infamous date. You write about waking up and you said, that's it. You know, I'm making a change. And I'm curious, what is specific about that date? What change did you make? And why then?
That's a great question. And first off, you did your homework, the date and everything. I'm impressed. You got it down. So yeah, I mean, long story short is that that was the culmination of 10 years of slowly becoming an alcoholic. And I think, I don't know that I fully realized how bad it was until about 2 months before that date. I started journaling in the morning when I would wake up hungover, which was 5 to 7 mornings a week. I'm sad to say, but it's true. And I finally started reading the journal entries and they were all the same. It was, I feel lazy this morning. My head is hurting. I feel like I don't want to do anything. And then that morning in October of 2011, I think it was just the snowball effect of the last 10 years hitting me all at once. I woke up on the floor of my living room in my house on a Sunday morning after another night of partying. And I just had that moment where I looked myself in the mirror, hungover, head pounding, nauseous, all that stuff. I was 55 pounds overweight, and it was the breaking point. And it was the first time I had ever said this to myself. And I just gave a speech about this last week, but I hated the person that was looking back. I didn't respect the person. I didn't like the person. And I say that in an empowering way, because that meant I don't care what it takes. I'm going to do whatever it takes to change, because if I keep this going for another 3 to 5 years, I call it a negative vision, where if I keep this same lifestyle going, I would have been in jail or dead for sure within 5 years. So I think that helped me change then, or at least start the process of changing. I shouldn't say it was like, poof, everything was all great, but it definitely started the process.
And while you're going through the drinking and prior to October 30th of 2011, did you have like weekends and days where you'd wake up and you say, okay, today's the day, whether it was a couple months before, or a year before, and today I was going to do it. And then just sort of the setback took place.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely happened. I can remember walking home many nights by myself because I was one of those that would just, I would exit randomly and then nobody would see me the rest of the night. And I remember thinking, like, wouldn't it be cool to actually be healthy? Like, that would be cool. And then the next morning, you're right, I would say, I need, this sucks to feel like this. And then inevitably, I would just, the loop would still continue. And so, yeah, I think it was a pent up frustration over those last few years that finally hit the breaking point that I'm so blessed that it happened. Like that rock bottom, I think there's a quote that says that rock bottom can teach you more than any peak of a mountain. And I think it did. Like, I'm so blessed to have hit that rock bottom because it was an empowering moment where I finally took control of my life versus blaming everybody else for my issues.
Yeah, no, for sure. And during that time prior to quitting, were you active in terms of training? Would you work out, or was it like a complete, I don't do anything, I work, I drink, hang out with my friends, or were you active at all?
I was not active. I would go to the gym probably 3 days a week. I was the guy that would go to the gym, lift some heavy weight, do zero cardio, and lift some heavy weight and think that was, I was doing good by me. And so I had a mentor of mine tell me eventually, he said, you cannot outwork a bad diet or a bad lifestyle. But for me, it was more than just the diet. And he was so right. I couldn't do that. I couldn't outwork a bad diet. So yeah, I would be active, but not much at all. And that was part of the reason why I was gaining a significant amount of weight as well. And I just had no drive or motivation. And I think it was because of this cycle of the lifestyle I had created for myself.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so fast forward now, post that date, chapter two, or the next phase of life, if you will, you know, and you look and you see all these incredible accomplishments, 21 marathons in 21 days, lifting 1 million pounds and setting a world record, you know, cycling significant amount of times in Australia for, you know, leukemia, a great cause. You know, I even caught a video of you, a clip of you running in your neighborhood. I think you did a 100-mile run in your neighborhood with kids running by. Sort of reminded me of, you know, Rocky running up to the museum. You know, what is it? What goes through your mind and what's pushing you to really accomplish all these incredibly diverse things that require significant amount of mental strength and training and preparation?
This is such a good question. And I think a ton about this, Darren, because I think a part of it is always going to be, I don't think it's running away from the person I used to be, but I do think it's using the person I used to be as motivation to make sure the opposite occurs. So, I mean, every single morning that I work out, I mean, I give thanks that I'm able to move my body, but I, for like a half second, I think about that alcoholic for 10 years. And I just think of how mentally weak he was and how he blamed everybody else. And really, I don't even see it as the same person anymore, but I definitely use that as motivation to push through and do some of these other activities. And then a big part of it is just, I've sort of become obsessed with growth and seeing how far I can push the mind and body. And I think it is both. I was just talking to a friend about this and doing these endurance races, while it's clearly, it looks all physical, I would argue that it's more 90% mental, maybe 80% mental, 20% physical, because when your body, like 100-mile run, your body feels like it's broken at mile 50. And you got to figure out a way to get the next half of the next 50 miles. So I think that's a lot of mindset. And where I've seen it for me, Darren, has been helpful is it maps over into life. So when you run any of these distances, it doesn't have to be 100 miles. It could be a 5K or a 10K, and that's really out of your comfort zone. Then when something happens in everyday life, your child gets sick or you have a tough client call, it's like, well, I pushed myself in this 5K, 10K, 100 miles. I can handle whatever life throws at me today. So I think it helps set me up for success, especially when setbacks happen in business and life.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I did also notice that you had a situation where you did tear your Achilles. And so, you know, one of these things is sort of like, although different areas of where you are, whether it's, okay, great, you know, I'm moving forward with my life now, I'm done with alcohol, I'm going to live a healthier lifestyle. Then all of a sudden you start to live this healthy lifestyle. And through this journey, you tear your Achilles. How did that happen? And what was the initial thought when that took place?
Oh, yeah, that actually happened at the tail end of running those 21 marathons in 21 days. So what happened was, this is right, it was during COVID, August of 2020. Nobody was really doing anything, including myself. And I thought, I need something to just keep me driven and keep me moving forward. So decided to run. I was raising money for a local cancer charity, and I was having people donate per mile that I ran. And I think nobody had anything to do at the time. So money's coming in left and right, because here's somebody out here doing something. And as the money's coming in, I'm thinking, oh my God, I need to run all these miles. So it ended up being a marathon a day. I was waking up at like 2:30 in the morning, running a marathon, then coming back and working for 8 hours that day. And yeah, it was like marathon 16 or 17. I felt the pain in my Achilles, and I didn't rupture it, but they said there was significant tears and damage in the Achilles. And yeah, so by the end of it, I mean, I could barely walk during the 21st one. I kind of hobbled my way through it. And then I was down for, and I didn't know this at the time. I knew there was a lot of pain there, but they didn't fully figure out what happened for, I think, a few months. Right. And then I couldn't run for 15 months after that. So it's, you know, it's like bittersweet. I'm pleased that I was able to run that many marathons in a row, but I would, you know, not encourage anybody, if you're feeling that Achilles pain. I should have probably stopped at 16 or 17 when the pain started. But yeah, it was tough to be out for 15 months, and sort of felt like something that I loved was taken from me. And at the same time, I think it helped prepare me for, that's life. I mean, right when we think everything can't get any better, yeah, Sometimes that's when the rug gets pulled out. So I dove into reading a lot of books and working on virtual speeches and trying to keep myself busy in those ways, because I was not running for a while.
Yeah. And that's what's really interesting about that is the parallel between, okay, so it's not running, but it's not being able to do something that you love or hitting that setback. And a lot of people could look at that one of two ways. Okay, how am I going to, you know, continue to grow and better myself and improve and feel good about myself? Or this sucks. I'm going to get on the couch. I'm going to pick up a drink again. I'm going to order a pizza consistently, and I'm going to turn the other way. So, you know, we have decisions, right? We can make a right towards empowering ourselves, or we can make a left and say, you know what, I'm going to join this sort of pity party and I'm not going to really move forward. And so in that moment, did you, similar to sort of when that switch went on back in 2011, when your Achilles, did you automatically know what you were going to do? Okay, great. I'm going to start lifting. I'm going to do these non-running or non-mobile type of things. Like, was there ever any doubt in terms of what you were going to do next?
That's a great question. And I think there was, first off, a lot of doubt that I'd be able to do any sort of extreme activity ever again. Like I was almost at the point where I was assuming I was done. But to your point, there was never a doubt that I could think of something to do. I mean, whether it's maybe you set the world record for push-ups because I can't do anything with cardio, so I got to find something else. I don't think there was as much doubt of, I will find something, whatever that is. But at the same time, I went through a difficult time just sort of getting into that endurance racing and then having it be gone that quick. was difficult for me. So there was definitely doubt of what is next and will I ever be able to do this again? Because like I said, I was convinced I would not run again. I thought it was over. And I got lucky with meeting a friend of a surgeon who did a procedure on me that's allowed me to start running again. But there was a lot of doubt and difficult times during those 15 months for sure.
And when you feel that way, you know, what are some of the things like you do to help push through that? Because, you know, it's sort of like this thing, you know, on a very simple level, you know, sometimes we think, okay, I'm going to go for a run, I'm going to go to the gym. And then it's sort of like, great, I'm too lazy, I'm not going to go and I'm not going to do it. And one thing someone mentioned to me a long time ago, which I totally relate to, is you never regret a workout. You know, it may be hard to get there. You may be doubting yourself that you're able to do it. You know, so in those moments, you're saying that you did have some of those challenges of the doubt. Was there anything in particular that you did to sort of help push you through? Was it sort of becoming aware and touching back and tasting and feeling of how you felt back in 2011 that keeps sort of pushing you forward?
Definitely was a big part of it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I definitely thought about that person because I know the 2010 version of me would have gone back to drinking and would have gone back to unhealthy habits. I think that was a big part of it. And really, I think reading, sort of diving into reading at the time, helped me once I started learning about other people's stories. And there's been other people that have had torn ACLs or they've blown out their Achilles and then they've made a comeback. So now you see, oh, there's hope that this is possible that I could make a comeback. So yeah, I think there was doubt the whole time, but I did use that 2011 version to keep myself moving in a positive direction. And also I think it was helpful to do things like when I'm running my podcast, like I dove into that more. So when something got taken away, like the physical aspect, at least with endurance running, there's so many other things that I still enjoy doing. And I dove deeper into those, which I think helped in a big, big way.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. And it's one of the things that's really intriguing. I know we're talking about 21 marathons in 21 days, and we're talking about 100-mile runs and the million pounds, you know, which is very interesting. I want to get back to that in a second. But one of the things I was really myself been really excited about is really how simple things can be in the idea of sort of one step first, being consistent. Someone I know, you know, who's done some incredible things. He's got this hashtag called boringly consistent, you know, and you can't get to mile 26 if you don't take your first step. But I was very interested to hear sort of the thought process behind your 15-minute concept. You know, I noticed that it's sort of what you do the 15 minutes first thing in the morning, 15 minute abs. And not to sound cliche, like, you know, okay, great, here's a Suzanne Summers infomercial. But the reality is that we can do so much in such a little bit of time that helps us feel so much better about ourselves. So I was curious about what that process was and what got you to this 15 minute, you know, vision or message.
Yeah, so that, I mean, to your point, so the first and only book I wrote is called The First 15. And the whole point was I think I was overwhelmed by the idea of trying to be sober and making healthy decisions for 24 hours. And I thought, okay, let's chunk this thing down. And just, what if I just start the day? And I think it started with 5 minutes. Like, what if I do something good in the first 5 minutes of the day versus hitting the snooze button 4 or 5 times and starting the day off in a rush. So it started out, this small amount of time, and it just started adding on. So I would get up 15 minutes before I usually did, and the not drinking helped. And then I was thinking, okay, I feel a lot better. I'm more productive at work. I'm feeling healthier. What if I get up 30 minutes earlier and then did that for a few months, 45 minutes, an hour. And now, you know, I'm up at 4:30 in the morning now. And it's like between 4:30 and 7:30 a.m. that's my time. I mean, I absolutely cherish that time. And to your point of like the running the 100 miles and all that, I'll give you a quick story. Where I used to live in Pittsburgh, there was a staircase, and it was not that long of a staircase. My first workout after I wanted to stop drinking, I think it was the next Monday morning, I said, all right, I'm going to go up and down the stairs 10 times, no matter how long it takes. I'm going to do that and be done. And I just told my friend this story the other day. I went down and I went up to the top once. And I mean, I thought I was going to die. I mean, I'm hunched over. And I walk back home. I said, all right, well, that's a start. One time up and down the stairs. And then slowly, and it took months, but I would slowly go to 1.5, then 2, then 4, then 8. And then before I knew it, I'm running up and down the stairs 15, 20 times, and I'm feeling great. So I think it all starts with that just small, whether it's you wake up 5 minutes earlier, 15 minutes earlier, and then you just build upon that. Because to me, it was overwhelming to think of waking up 2 hours earlier and having this big morning routine. What if I just chunk it out 15 minutes at a time?
Yeah, and I think you bring up such a great point, because I think we live in a world right now where everything's fast, instant gratification. We look at other people and we say, okay, great. I want to be like them. I wish I had their life. And the reality is, number one, we don't know what their life is like. And number two, we also don't know what the work that they put in to get there. And, you know, we all go through these type of challenges. We all go through these type of things. But, you know, we're all familiar with David Goggins, right? And he, you know, was this incredibly overweight man who ate, didn't take care of. And I remember in his book, he started talking about how he went out for his first run. And then randomly, there is another guy that I saw on social media who is a 300-pound guy, but at one point he was a 400-pound guy, and he runs marathons all the time. And he said when he first started, he couldn't run more than 15 seconds. But the next day or the next time, he ran 30 seconds. And then he ran a minute. And part of all of these experiences and growth is the journey, and it's the improvement. So if you're running 15 seconds or you can't get up those stairs and you come back, well, guess what? You got up 10 stairs. Then you got up 2 flights of stairs. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we're feeling in this world today is we have to be perfect. We have to be in incredible shape. Everyone else is in there. You see on social media, everyone's got in this incredible life and it seems like so easy. But the reality is that that's not the case. And whether it's through physical, mental health and wellness, you know, business, nothing happens overnight.
I could not agree with that anymore. And to your point of the vulnerability, I mean, I think that's a big aspect of it. And like, I actually put up a video last week about, I used to want to have, my goal would be perfection. Like, I want my body to be perfect. I want my salary to be perfect. Every video that I put up, I want it to be perfect. Well, it's not going to happen. Like, you're going to put up all these podcasts. None of them are going to be perfect. None of mine are even close to perfect. But I think in that vulnerability and being willing to put yourself out there when it's not perfect and you're constantly working on that process, it just makes you more real and relatable. And it took me a long time and many bad speeches to figure that out.
Yeah. And it's like incredible because you have such an amazing energy to you, such an optimistic view on life. And just through what you share with the public, it's incredible. But dealing with that October 30th day and dealing with the Achilles, and then you were married for a period of time where you had to go through divorce. And I'm a product of divorce. My parents got divorced. I have so many friends that got divorced. And one of the things that's really interesting to me is, you know, life is short, but there's also a lot of opportunity. And there's so many people that are not in great relationships, that aren't happy. It wasn't the best situation. They may or may not have a respect for their spouse or their previous, but they sort of just get stuck there. And it's sort of the same thing. And it's like, okay, well, this is what my life is going to be. And you have such an incredible history of when you were down or feeling a little bit in some darker places of sort of climbing out of those. And particularly to the relationship side on the divorce end, it's always very interesting to me because I feel like there's always someone who can hear what that experience was like, the fear of going through it, and understanding sort of what's on the other side about that. So just curious, sort of, you know, not in particular details, but did you have that point where you're like, okay, I need to move on, or this is just how does one go about making a decision like that?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, outside of the overcoming alcoholism was the probably the toughest thing that I've gone through. And it's been a few years now. So, yeah, I'm very open to discuss it. It was just one of those moments where, you know, I think I would have preferred to continuously fight through. And like, to me, like you say, the vows, and it's like, all right, now we got to figure out whatever happens, we're going to make it work. It you could see we were going opposite directions. And it was just that we had dinner one night and my ex-wife looked me dead in the eye and she just gave me the words that it sounds like a lot of your friends, I know a lot of my friends have heard. She just said, I don't love you anymore. I want a divorce. And that, I mean, it hit me like a freight train. And there was definitely, you know, those next few months are sort of a blur. Now, I will say this. I was blessed that I had two big events on my calendar. One being, this was 2 weeks prior to my first Ironman. And I remember my parents just saying, like, I don't know how the heck you're going to continue to push through an Ironman during all this whirlwind that's going on. And it was very difficult. And then I had
the irony is probably as challenging as it was. The irony is probably that's exactly what you needed.
It was the perfect timing. Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely the perfect timing. And it was the first event that my ex-wife really was not at. So, you know, when I got to the finish line, it was just me standing there. And like, I get goosebumps talking about it because I think it was like this new version of myself that had to start emerging. And I think to have something to look forward to at all times is huge, especially when going through something like that. And yeah, I think to your point of the callbacks to 2011, that definitely happened there. It was like, okay, I've been through alcoholism. I've torn my Achilles at the peak of my athletic abilities, what I felt. And now we're going through a divorce. It was almost like I was seeing how good the story could be in the future now, because part of me always wants to help out other people. And I continuously love to help out, particularly men, just because I'm a guy who went through divorce. And I know that there's millions of guys that go through divorce. And if I can help inspire one of them to say, okay, wait a minute, I could lose the love of my life, but still turn it around and almost flip the story on its head to use it as fuel to move me in a new direction. And so the story that I flipped around that I've thought about a lot is, maybe it wasn't this, you know, obviously it was a difficult experience, but I used it as a, what if she set me free and asking me for a divorce to do more of what I love, to connect with other people that I wouldn't have met otherwise, to live a completely different life. And it's nothing against her, but I'm going to utilize that to help propel me in a new positive direction. And having said all that, for the first 6 months, I mean, it was still extremely difficult. I definitely talked to therapists and coaches and mentors to help me get through that, really to make sure that I did not make any big trip ups like going back to alcohol or, you know, abusing my body in a different way, which I'm blessed to say I didn't. But it was a massive learning experience. And now I have a whole new respect for anybody going through a tough breakup or a divorce or anything like that, because I feel your pain.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is that who you are and what you do. You know, I saw this past weekend, you stayed up for 60 hours, did some training. We'll get into the Savage Adventure Group in a couple minutes, but you know, you did a 4x48 where you brought a group of people together. And it's one of these things where I always think it's so important to let people know that they're not alone, that they may have troubles with a relationship, financial troubles. They may have substance abuse issues, and it doesn't mean that it's over. And it could be as simple, because there's a significant amount of internal thoughts that we all carry. And, you know, at a time, and I think you and I have discussed this before as well, when you're just scrolling through social media and everyone looks like they have a perfect situation. And I love the fact that you talk about these things, because someone's going to see you running the Pittsburgh Marathon, going down to Clearwater, running a 50K, you know, all day running co-event, and doing these things and plunging and doing all these wonderful, incredible things. They're like, gosh, I want to be like Matt, which is great. But at the same time, it's nice to know that you're human, you know, and that it's not like, okay, great, life is just, you know, a box of chocolate, to quote Forrest Gump. And so I think that's really impressive. And it sort of, it shares the idea with people that, hey, you know, you, their setbacks are okay. And as you said, it's part of life. In a lot of ways, like after you're divorced, you go to your first, you said it was an ultra marathon or an Ironman.
Yeah, it was an Ironman. Yeah,
right. So it's almost like 2 weeks later, it's like you're going in and you go in the water dealing with this divorce and this pain, and you come out of the water to hit your bike a new man. Relatively speaking, it's like you went into the ocean, you came out, and this is what you can accomplish. And so I just really appreciate you sharing that, because I think it's very important for everyone to understand that there are challenges and you can push through. And you made an incredible point, like you wake up every day, whether it's 4:30 and doing your morning routine for 3 hours, coffee, ice barrel, sauna, working out, whatever it may be. But you want to also help and you want to inspire others. And that brings me to the sort of the Savage Adventure Group. Obviously very familiar with the event that you put together in March in Pittsburgh, doing the 4x4x48. Now you've got something else in Colorado. And can you share a little bit about the thought process behind that and some of the takeaways you have just from that one event in the community and what you've seen, how people have grown from it and how you've grown from putting that together?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you asking about that. And to your point earlier, Darren, about when you said you are not alone, I think this Savage Adventure Group, that's what it's proven, is that nobody is alone. And so this 4x4x48, you run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. And I did it last year in Colorado with a good friend of mine. And there was like four of us that did it. And it was a blast. And I thought, what if we do it bigger next year? It's the first weekend of March in Pittsburgh. Would people come to Pittsburgh to do this? And so we got a lodge up about half hour north of Pittsburgh. We had 25 people run the event. And the coolest part was, and this is really what gives me goosebumps, is I think when you can use the word suffer or push yourself through a difficult challenge like this, it builds relationships quicker than anything I've ever seen. My favorite stories that happened was after this weekend in early March, we do this 4 miles every 4 hours or 48 hours. The next week, two people who had never met prior to this grabbed breakfast together, and they sent me a picture of the two of them out to breakfast. And I was thinking, this is what it's all about. Like, yeah, these people, they had something in common. And they may not have met otherwise, and this event brought them together. So it felt like there was something special going on. And I think doing difficult things, whether it's Savage Adventure Camp or anything else that's out there as a group, I think it makes you feel less alone. And I know loneliness is a big issue in the United States now more than ever. And it just can connect you with, maybe you meet one person that could be a relationship or friendship that you have for the rest of your life by doing one weekend of something difficult. And that's been the most exciting part for me. And I feel like, to your point, I learned more hosting that event than maybe any of the participants learned, just because you sort of take a step back and go, wow, how cool is it that 25 people want to do this and push themselves in something that they know there is probably a lot of doubt and they're not sure if they can get it done, but they showed up anyways, and most of them completed the whole thing.
Yeah. And to your point, the friendships, you know, I always say it's like, okay, you know, people talk about half marathons and marathons and ultra marathons and all these different things. And it's incredible the feeling you get when you go to your local 5K, and whether you walk it or run it and you're surrounded by people, and there's this common bond. You know, there's always this thing in the business world where it's like, okay, great, you know, you got to hit the golf course, because what the irony is, like, you're not talking really business. You know, you're getting to know people. It's natural. It's organic. You have something in common. Taking that to, okay, great, helping people, you know, get you. And I just think it's incredible that you've been able to bring a group of strangers together to share in this incredible group. And, you know, I've read up on Denver, or, you know, Colorado, right outside of Colorado Springs. And that sounds really, really fantastic. So I could only imagine. I did speak with one member who we mutually know afterwards, and they just said, what an incredible event. And you just saw it also in, you know, in the love. And what I love also about something like that is afterwards, it's not only that you could accomplish something physically, but to your point earlier, this is mostly mental. And what do you take from that? And how do you apply being able to run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours? How can you apply that into parenting, business, you know, relationships? And all those traits are common. Switching gears a little bit, which despite the fact that you've done so many incredible things, one of the things that I felt was most inspiring and really intrigued me was your public speaking and the fact that you had a fear of it. So you joined, I believe it's called Toastmasters. Yeah. You join Toastmasters and you start to learn, and you're at this one little chapter in Pittsburgh and you're leaning into your discomfort. And next thing I know, you've won it and you continue to improve and you've won the awards for this and it's going on. So if you don't mind, talk a little bit about how you lean into that fear in the doubt of speaking in front of all these people or publicly, whether it's one person or 100 people. And what's that feeling like in leaning in, and how do you overcome that fear?
Yeah, this is, I love talking about this because the story starts in a horrible sense, at least in my life. In fifth grade, I was kind of forced to run for student government. I had to give this speech in front of the whole school, and I forgot the speech in my locker. So I just sort of winged it, and it was only like 8 sentences long, but I blanked out after the 7th sentence, and I just stood there in front of the whole 200 plus people in this auditorium and said nothing. And then my teacher had to bail me out and feed me my final line. And I got off the stage. I was crying. It was horrible. But that was my only experience public speaking. And I let that get into my head that I'm not a good speaker. And I carried that with me for over a decade. And I think the only thing that got me over that hump was Toastmasters. And by the way, I think that's one of the best organizations. I'm still a part of it. And it's just basically, it's groups all over the world, and it helps you get out of your comfort zone by public speaking and working on communication and leadership. I joined Toastmasters, ironically, in 2011, right at the end of 2011 into 2012. I just felt like the story that I had was worth sharing about the overcoming an alcohol addiction. I couldn't share it because I didn't have the confidence in front of a group to put a sentence together, let alone an entire speech. For the first 15 speeches, this is embarrassing for me to admit, Darren, but this is true. You have 5 to 7 minutes to give a normal Toastmaster speech. I didn't reach 5 minutes until the 15th speech. I would get to a minute and a half, 2 minutes, panic, and just say thank you and sit down. It took me that long, which was months in the organization, to just be able to speak for 5 to 7 minutes. And so I started to get asked to speak at different areas because of this story of the alcohol addiction turned fitness, you know, physique champion. And I was frustrated that I felt like I could add value to other people, but I couldn't formulate it in front of a group. So it took many years. And yeah, to your point of becoming this champion, I wanted to get on the world championship of public speaking stage. And there's 5 levels. It's the 5th level is the world championships. I never got through the first round until this year. So I competed 3 times, 2016, 17, and 18, lost in the first round every time. I finally got mentors, coaches, took classes. And this year, I'm actually waiting right now to see if they choose me. They picked 2 out of 10 district winners to go to the Bahamas in August to represent at the World Championships. And it's just been a fun journey. Like, it's been a 12-year process to get better slowly. I know what you're thinking. I'm a slow learner. I'm sure that's what you're thinking.
No, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking like this is like aligned with like life, you know, and that, you know, there's always this thought process that I've internalized sometimes, like, why not me? The most famous, incredible actor was not an actor at some point. You know, the person that went to run a marathon never ran in his life or her life before, you know? So what it shows is that you gained, yes, setbacks, probably insecurities and doubt existed throughout this whole process, But as you went from a minute and a half to 3 minutes, or 3 minutes to finally the 5 minutes, and you may not have won, you may not have been chosen, maybe the speech wasn't great, maybe you were sweating, but at the end of the day, you made progress. And yeah. So I think the thing is that we all live in an environment in the world right now where we want, and we touched on earlier, instant gratification. I have to be this perfect person, whether it comes to nutrition. Well, I'm just going to do the keto diet, or I'm going to fast, or I'm not going to do any of these things because I want to be quickly in shape. And what I think it really shows, and I know this in the business world as well, things take time. You know, we can look at anyone that we is a mentor that we look up to, whatever it may be. They did not go from day zero to day one, getting ready to potentially speak in the world championship of speaking, you know, in the Bahamas in August. So it's a process. And just like the training from 15 seconds to 100 miles, you know, it starts somewhere. So I think that's, you know, fantastic. And I think a lot of people have their own internal doubt, like, why me? Why can it not be me? I'm never going to be like Matt. I'm never going to be like this person. And it brings me to another point. You were talking about Toastmasters. You mentioned something which I picked up on, which I thought was really good, and I'm going to read it. And it was a very simple thing that you said a little bit in jest, but also in the really meant it, is that it's okay. We all have a story to tell. The key about that is that we do. And when I started this podcast, I'm like, well, who am I? I've never done a podcast before. But the thing is that we all do have a story and people can share, and that's the beauty of it. So I think by leaning into your fears and accomplishing these goals, there's a lot that is aligned in the mental growth and the mental desire to achieve, but they're also very diverse. Joe Rogan, the guy who wins the New York, or girl who wins the New York Marathon every year, they didn't start winning the New York Marathon or being the top podcast in the world or on Spotify. And I think that's the lesson, you know, in all this, in understanding that you've taken so much victory and confidence has grown in those 11, 12 years it took you to get to this stage where you are. And I just think that's a fascinating story. I think the messaging behind it is just phenomenal.
I appreciate all of that. And that's so true. With everybody has a story. Oh my goodness. I'm blessed to be able to mentor a couple people in Toastmasters now. And the thing they mention almost constantly is, what am I going to say? Like, what am I going to speak about? And then you start asking questions about their life. And it's like, they've overcome this, and they have this job, and like, they've managed this person. And I'm like, you have 7,000 stories in there. But I think when you're in it, and maybe it is because of doubt, or they don't feel like they're enough, they don't see all those stories. And to your point too, of the getting up, I love how you said that it was a minute and 30 seconds and then 2 minutes and 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Like, that is the progress it took me to get to 5 minute speech. I think I was thinking, I'm progressing. This is exciting. It wasn't like the first time I gave a 5 minute speech, I feel like I won the Stanley Cup. I mean, it felt like I was a champion, because I couldn't believe I stood in front of a group and actually spoke for 5 minutes without dying in front of everybody. So yeah, I think progress is the happiness. I mean, that it's so much fun to progress in anything. And I think that was a great point.
Yeah, no, well, listen, I mean, so much that you've accomplished, so much that you've overcome. And I say that in a very respectful way, because what you've experienced and what you've shared today, addiction, divorce, injury, doubt, fear, anxiety, and to be able to have that, which we all have in some capacity, whatever that means. But then let's go here. Okay, entrepreneur, author, professional speaker, ultra endurance athlete, bodybuilder, 21 marathon runner in 21 days, launched Savage Adventure Group, which I've been fortunate to be a guest on, and also have listened to the Average to Savage podcast. Phenomenal. Yeah. So congrats on that. And then, oh, by the way, just in the little corner there, we'll also let you know that you're a very well-respected CFP, you know, helping people with their finances as well. So all these things coming together, despite some of the challenges. So I'm really excited that we had the opportunity to connect and chat today. One of the things that I want to ask you, and I want to sort of end almost every podcast with, so love to get not necessarily speed answers, but I just have like three questions. Can you remember when the last time you had doubt about something?
Probably this morning. I mean, in all honesty, the last time I had doubt was coming onto your podcast, because you don't know how it's, I don't know how it's going to go. I don't fully know all the questions you're going to ask, which I love that, because I think just having a conversation is the most organic way to come across, and it's best for your audience. But I think every single day, and I don't know if this is normal or not, but I have doubt every single day. I mean, absolutely. And I think doing all of these crazy things helps me, if it's say no to doubt, yes, or maybe it's that there is still doubt, but I'm going to push through and do it anyways. And I think that's to your whole brand, which I love the name. And I think it's huge to have doubt, but want to keep taking action anyways. And sort of every time I get up to give a speech, there's still doubt. There's absolute, what if I don't connect with the audience? What if I have this story that I forget to tell? Which normally happens every time anyways, but that doesn't mean it's not going to be an impactful speech. So yeah, doubt creeps in a lot.
And then I guess the follow-up question to that would be, specific to those feelings of doubt, is there something in your mind or something that you do to overcome or push through that moment of doubt?
I think the best answer I have to that is, comes from a story when, this is back in, I think it's 2016, 17, first and only time I've ever gone bungee jumping. So you basically, you know, you stand on this bridge and have to throw yourself off this bridge with a little gum band around your ankles. But all they tell you, there's no prep. They say 3, 2, 1, jump. And that's it. And then you jump. And I thought about that afterwards, and I was journaling when, after I did it. And I think to me, the way that I overcome it is like this 3, 2, 1 jump. Like I need to take action quick, because if I let it sit and marinate, I'm probably going to do nothing because I'll talk myself out of it. So whether that's signing up for a speech or talking to a girl, like whatever it is, I think it needs to happen. And as soon as the idea comes in, boom, take action on it.
Yeah, because in a lot of ways, we all sort of, we run away from our fear, right? They always say, like, you know, most people revert. They don't confront it or their doubt, right? So leaning into it. And then the last question is sort of aligned with this, but are there 3 or 5 things that you could share, you know, that you would recommend just from your experience on to sort of push through that doubt, you know, whether it's part of your routine, whether it's, you, I think one of them you just mentioned, sort of the idea of just get going and leaning into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 3, 2, 1 go. I love the words you're using, leaning into that fear. I think that's a great way to think about it. I think anchoring my day with physical fitness is, there's just no better feeling. And I think that's been a big help to get me over any doubt that may occur throughout the rest of the day. I think another thing is taking full accountability, full ownership over yourself, myself, my actions, because I know what life looks like when you play the blame game. And I did that for 10 years and it left me empty. And I don't know if I was depressed. I'm sure I was unhappy. I know that for sure. And as soon as you start pointing the finger at yourself instead of the whole world, life gets a lot more fun. And then the last thing, because I just talked about this at a keynote last week, is having a compelling future or a vision of what you want out of life or what you want out of your body, your mind, your relationships, I think is a huge deal and can pull you towards whatever that is. I think a lot of us, myself included, think about, what do I not want? And I think it's like one of those where, you know, if you're sled riding and you keep looking at the tree, eventually you hit the tree. So don't think about what you don't want. Think about what it is that you are after and what you do want. What's the vision, the compelling future for you? And I think that helps. If it's compelling enough, it's going to get you over any doubt that you may have, or at least start the process.
Yeah, it's I really appreciate you sharing that, you know, because resonates so well, resonates totally well. So the last thing, because I have to ask, you know, there's this brand out there that I think LeBron James started talking about years ago called Taco Tuesday. And I've noticed that you've got Savage Saturday. So it's Friday afternoon. Last weekend, as we mentioned earlier, I caught a glimpse of a 60-hour no sleep challenge. Do you have anything planned for tomorrow?
Savage Saturday, my favorite day of the week. All it means is you get out of your comfort zone doing something that is just not in your normal realm. And I do. I have to see if I can get a video for you, Darren. You're probably going to laugh. There's an event, and the whole event's going to be awesome. It's called Sweat Fest. A friend of mine is running. And it's basically like six different workouts over the course of a few hours. So you get to test out different gyms. And I think one of them is some sort of like hip hop dance thing. And I'm going to be so far out of my element. It's going to be insane, but I can't wait to take it. So that's a piece of Savage Saturday. And then,
well, it sounds like from bar crawl to gym crawl.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. But by the way, I'm more into the gym crawl, which is great. And definitely love to see some video of you, doing some dancing. Or maybe like, right. Some people are pole dancing now too for exercise. So, you know,
I've seen that. Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far yet. Hey, I want to see a video of that.
But one thing I do know, if that's on the menu, then that's what you're going to do. Cause you're Matt Scaletti.
You better, and I'm going to have some doubt, but I'm going to go out there and do it anyways.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Matt, listen, man, this was awesome. I really appreciate you coming on to the podcast. And there's so much in life we feel that is so unattainable. And to hear your story, your journey, your accomplishments, you know, and everything. Thank you so much for sharing. I know I've picked up so much information and tidbits that I'm going to apply to some of my activities and in goals as well. So really appreciate you coming on and look forward to catching up again in the near future and hearing about how the public speaking in the Bahamas potentially went. I got my money on you, man.
I appreciate it. My fingers are crossed. And thanks for having me on. It's been an honor to be here.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Say No to Doubt with our guest, Matt Scaletti. If you were inspired by Matt's journey of overcoming alcoholism and pushing his physical and mental boundaries, make sure to share this episode with your friends and family. Remember, it's about starting small and being consistent in achieving your personal goals. If you're facing a setback like an injury or a personal struggle, keep Matt's story in mind and know that you can navigate through it and come out stronger. Don't forget to follow this podcast for more inspiring stories like Matt's. Remember, every step you take, no matter how small, is a step towards saying no to doubt and embracing your potential.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment if you enjoyed the show. To follow on social media, at Matt Scaletti on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot me a message, reach out. I'd love to hear feedback, and wishing you an amazing rest of your week.